Hi, I'm Tim, compulsive overeater.
Let's see. I am back from relapse and abstinent for just over 14 years, and I'm down 103 pounds as of this month. And why I like to say the exact number is because my disease loves the vagueness. It loves gray areas, and it really is kind of like a bacteria or a fungus or whatever. Once you give it a little bit of oxygen and a little bit of breathing room, it tends to grow. And so I really, because, again, I came into Overeaters Anonymous, and I was given the gift really quickly. I've been given the gift twice, and it really, I came in and kind of got it right away. And the first time I gave it away. And so I want to treat this as a serious piece of business on a daily basis. I grew up in the Midwest. I did not grow up as a heavy kid, although I ate big. We grew up on a working piece of property. We were always either working for my dad's company or working on the farm. And we were encouraged to eat big meals. We were encouraged because we might not stop that day for lunch. We just might just keep working. And I hated it. I hated it. The things that you had to do well in my family to get along were try hard at school. You didn't even have to have good grades, but you had to try hard and work hard. And then work hard. And all I really ever wanted to do was play sports. I wanted to have fun all the time. And so I remember going to my father at about the age of probably 8 or 9 years old. And I'm like, Dad, this is not fun. This is when subdivisions, the farmlands were starting to be turned into subdivisions and kids were living in around each other. And we were way out on the farm. So the closest house was a quarter of a mile away. And so and we had always had work to do. And again, it's not always, but that was what I remembered of it. And so I went to him and I'm like, Dad, these other kids get to go to summer camp. We had to work for my father at his company all summer long. On Saturdays, we had to go in and clean his offices. And I hated it. And I went to him and I explained to him what I wanted. it's so funny. And he's like, and he listened. He was very respectful. He really was trying hard. But he just said, listen, this is what we do. This is who we are. This is the reality of your life. And I'm like, well, I told you what I wanted. And you didn't give it to me, so I'm going to now start sneaking. At that kind of point is when I was like, I told you what I wanted, and so I started lying, I started stealing, I started cheating. So, and I was raised with I was raised in a faith that gave me a good moral compass. I had no problems with what the school was teaching me, and I really wanted to be that kid. And when I slowly started doing things against that, I slowly started, this is when the weight, kind of at 8 or 9, when I really started noticing the weight, I was eating differently than other people. And I remember the first time that I changed my perception of reality with food was when I was probably in 6th or 7th grade at the time, so 10 or 11 years old. I liked a girl, she didn't like me, and for some reason, and again, nobody ever taught me this, I went home, I got the toaster out, I got the loaf of bread out, I got the butter out, and as fast as that process could happen, the toast coming off, I could eat it just as fast. I mean, it was almost like seamless. It was almost like, and somewhere, what makes me different than just overweight people, what makes me different was in somewhere along the way, all of a sudden, the girl rejecting me wasn't a problem. I mean, it literally changed. It was okay. Everything was fine. And so, again, I wasn't aware of it. I didn't go off on this big, huge bender and just start eating. My mom came home and she's like, hey, Tim, you ate a whole loaf of bread? And I'm like, yeah. She's like, well, you have to eat dinner. And I'm like, no problem. And I have no problem eating dinner, right? And so, and again, I didn't gain weight because I was in sports. I was doing all sorts of things. When I got to high school, the mentality of if I couldn't be the best at it, then I didn't want to do it, kind of started coming into my life. The nature of quitting, it was the easier, softer way instead of working through difficulties and not being the best and being just in the middle of the pack. I couldn't handle it. And nobody was, again, I never asked. I couldn't, my father was busy. Everybody was busy. And so I just started quitting things. And my father did pull me aside and say, hey, Tim, These are serious consequences. What you're doing now is going to be a hard habit to break in the future. And you know, he told me he wasn't going to force me to do it. And so I just quit. And that became a theme for me. And it's still something. If I can't do it well, if I don't get immediate results of something, I quit. And so high school, I was still able to manage my weight. I went to a school that was more of an academic school, so it wasn't a competition for sports. So I could still, there were no cuts. And so I would quit and join, quit and join, and I could manage my weight. When I got to college is when really for me the food was unrestricted. And that's kind of when I put on, you know, maybe 40 or 50 pounds. And that was in my first 2 years of school. Lots of drinking. That's one thing I also found. For me, alcohol did exactly for me what food did for me. It took away, it made me feel okay. All the voices that were going on inside my head, all of a sudden just quieted down and I could be okay. But as I later discovered, when it was time for me to just let it go, like the big book talks about, I was the heavy drinker. The big book talks about it. And for a reason, it just disappeared from me. And I was able to maintain my weight at anywhere from 60 pounds, 40 pounds overweight in my 20s with the use of alcohol and drugs. And the drive for success. Bill talks a lot about those things. That, you know, the drive for sex was huge because it was like, oh, I wanted a girlfriend, so my belief was I had to be thin to get a girlfriend. And so losing weight was never the problem for me. It was maintaining any kind of sanity around food. So I would lose the weight, get a girl. I would always come into relationships thin, and I would leave fat. You know, and I could cycle through that. It didn't take long, and the peaks were getting higher, and the valleys were getting longer. You know, how long I could maintain the weight loss was getting shorter and shorter, and the will to do battle again, that trough was becoming bigger and bigger and lower and lower. And so I tried a lot of different things. I probably gained, once alcohol was removed, and one day I was a drinker and the next day I wasn't, I've never had to call a sponsor. I've never had to do an inventory. I've never had to be of service to my fellows to put down drinking. But, and that's an important part of my story, right? Because when I came into Overeaters Anonymous, I was hoping that it would be the same thing. After alcohol was put down, I ballooned up, I mean rapidly. And one of the things that's a big, shame is a big driver for me. Shame will get my attention quickly. And I gained so much weight one time, right after alcohol was removed. I was walking my dog and my back seized up in the middle of like a busy intersection. And I was in the crosswalk and I couldn't get out of the road. And my back, I was so afraid to move because I was afraid I was going to hurt myself. And I literally, and I'm like, oh my God. And I'm like, this has got to stop. And so as soon as I got up, it took me about 45 minutes to like just to get from the corner back to my place, which was like a block or two away. And I'm like, this has got to change. And so what I do, I signed up to run a marathon, and I ran a marathon. I mean, I still to this day have not run an organized 5K. I've never, so I just immediately went and ran a marathon. And the weight came off, and I started feeling good, and it was great. But I knew, during that time, I felt that I got a sense that I had a different relationship with food. There was something that I couldn't control. So after the marathon, literally within a week, I was looking for that next thing, because I was now running. And I, this is only through recovery that I was able to see this journey. And so, within a week, I'm calling up the Ironman, because I'm not running another marathon. And they're like, well, you know, don't you want to do a half or anything? I'm like, no, I'm going to do this one time and that's it. And they're like, well, you've got to qualify for this. And I'm like, listen, I'll do whatever it takes for you to treat me special. And I said, is there any way that you could do this? And they're like, yeah, if you give us $1,000, we will let you do this. And I'm like, here's a check. I didn't even have a bike. I had never swam. I'm like, I was that afraid of stopping. If I stopped, I was in trouble. And so, So they, I sent him a check. I went out and got a bike. I got in the gym and I started swimming and running. And 8 months later, I did the Ironman. And literally, as I'm driving back from Lake Placid back to Ohio, I'm thinking, what's next? And this is in the late 90s. And this is when Mount Everest was huge, into thin air, the romance of all that stuff. And I'm like, hey, I'm going to climb Mount Everest. So I call and I'm like, hey, I don't want to be a mountaineer. I just want to climb Mount Everest. And they're like, hey, if you give us $80,000, we'll get you up that mountain. I'm like, I ain't got $80,000. But within 2 months of finishing the Ironman, I'm moving to LA. I literally just dropped my life. I'm moving out to LA. I literally pulled you. I'm not even aware of this. Again, this is only through recovery. I'm driving out to L.A. I'm out here and I'm going crazy. And my godfather, God bless him, he's one of my heroes in my life. In AA, he saw me. He saw this struggle. Unfortunately, he was a sober member of Alcoholics Anonymous but died from compulsive overeating. He could not get it. He could not get there was a different program that he had to work, and they took pieces and pieces and pieces. He was in his 60s and in a nursing home, and he died from this. And so he pulled me aside. He goes, Tim, he goes, I think you're going to do great. I think you're going to get out there. You're going to do really good because you're a hard worker, and everybody's looking for a hard worker. He goes, but at some point, you're going to show up, and you're going to have to deal with you. And I'm like, what kind of mumbo jumbo are you talking here? When I get to L.A., I'll be in L.A. I'll be there. I had no idea what he was talking about. I still no idea. And so, sure enough, after the newness of the new career, the new city, the new girls, whatever it was, started to wear off, and it only took about 13, 14 months to wear off, I started taking back those foods. I started slowly eating those foods that I was avoiding. I wasn't aware that I had this unnatural, I had this allergy to. And so I started gaining weight. I started gaining weight. And I did one last ditch effort to control it again. And I convinced my brothers and sisters to run a marathon with me. Now, I'm an Ironman finisher. And I'm convincing these two first-time runners to run a marathon with me. But I can't get, it's not new anymore. It's not exciting. The competition, which I can use competition. Okay, I didn't tell them it was a competition, by the way. You know, it was just in my head, right? And so I convinced them to run the, we're going to run, go back and run the Chicago Marathon. And during that time, I met a guy. I see him every once in a while on Zoom. He's up in Santa Clarita. We call him White Flag Walter. He used to bring a surrender flag to the meetings. And so I met him during this time in another 12-step fellowship that I was in at the time, and I no longer go. But we were fellowship, and I was like, I can't stop eating. He goes, yeah, you remind me a lot of me. And he's like, I'm like, really? And he's probably 6'2 and 180 pounds at the time, and I'm, you know, 5'8 and what do you call it, on my way to 250. And he's like, yeah. He goes, I'm a compulsive overeater, and I can't stop eating. And I'm just looking for the diet. I'm looking for the foods not to eat. And he's like, I couldn't execute that plan without a spiritual awakening. And I'm like, yeah, whatever. I don't want to do this. So I'm skipping runs, I'm skipping training. We get back to Chicago, you know, we all meet in Chicago. Family's there to support me, loving family there. We're all going to run together. And I think I'm going to blow my brother and sister away, right? And the night before, I'm like, they all go out for a nice dinner. I'm like, I'm going to stay in my room. No thought of eating or anything like that. I'm going to stay in my room, get some rest. And I'm like, well, I'm hungry. I need a little room service. And, of course, I open it up. And what a room service? Pizza, right? Let me get a pizza. I'll just have a couple pieces. You know, I'll save it afterwards. I ate the whole pizza that night. The marathon didn't turn out well. I'm sure some of it had to do with the pizza, but a lot more of it had to do that I wasn't doing the work, right? And sure enough, my brother and sister beat me. And again, shame is a big, big driver in my story. Shame gets my attention. I had expectations of easily being able to beat them, and I couldn't. I finished it, but it wasn't pretty. And so I did something in the Chicago airport that I've never done. I bought a diet book. I bought a book on a food plan. Even during the, I ate peanut butter and raisins. That was my training regimen for the Ironman. I don't know where I got that, but that's what it was. Fig Newtons, peanut butter and raisins and stuff. Yeah. And so I read that book. I am ready to go. I am going to have my first Monday morning, get back Sunday night, have all the foods Monday. By Monday at noon, I'm eating uncontrollably. I can't stop myself. And I call Walter and I was like, hey, I can't stop eating. And this is where quitting kind of comes in. I quit quickly. It's just not working. I quit quickly. I'm not a hanger-on, or I'm not a, you know, I just quit. And sure enough, I went in and I got pretty quickly. I had an experience. Came in, didn't like being here, was very, very self-conscious, very nervous, didn't want to do it. But at the end of the meeting, I did feel better. I did feel better. We went to fellowship, we talked, and I started this thing. And I'm going after the meeting and being part of something and reasoning things out. And that's really where, for me, where I got the recovery. The meetings are wonderful. But really where I got the sense of ease and comfort was at the fellowship afterwards. And so I immediately got that I had this abnormal reaction to certain foods. No, I knew once I started eating flour or sugar, the game was on, that I couldn't stop, because that's what I was binging on when I called Walter. I couldn't stop eating pasta. I couldn't stop eating pasta. I was supposed to portion it out. I couldn't portion it out. And so I put those things down, and literally my weight went down. And I worked. Walter had me go right through the 12 and 12. Within 6 or 8 months, I worked the steps. Everything was going really well. And kind of, you know, everything was great. I literally got back down to my high school wrestling weight. And, I mean, I looked good. And during this time, started dating. Got became the girlfriend, became the fiance. Everything was going. The job, which is now I'm 3 years into my journey here in LA, becomes the career. It's starting to go really well. And I'm having just a little less time for fellowship. That was the first thing for me that kind of fell away was the fellowship. It was this slow, gradual erosion away. And I would then start to leave meetings early to go to spin class. So as slowly Tim's plan starts to show up, just like my godfather prophesies, you leave me unattended and without a peer group of men that really can shepherd me and herd me, I will get my plan back into place. And it will be so subtle I won't be able to see it. So then what happens, and I'm going to tell you the thinking, because the thinking is the key thing for me. The thinking, because once I know the foods, that's easy, but the thinking is something that must be contended with on a daily basis. And so I'm going to tell you what happened is, as it gradually gets 5 minutes, perfect. So as everything, again, the girlfriend turns into the fiance, the job turns into the career, everything is going really well. And I'm slowly giving Overeaters Anonymous the one-finger salute. And I'm walking away. I'm going to less and less meetings. I'm calling in my food all the time. But the sponsorship calls, there's really no set process. It's just kind of when I feel like it, how to do it, when to do it. There's no accountability. And so I'm working on a job and I'm really stressed out. I have no idea why I was stressed out on this date in particular. And all of a sudden these donuts show up and they're shit donuts. They're not even good. They're Entenmann's. They're shit. They're terrible. And it's just like, oh, and immediately my mind goes, no, you can't have those. That would be a break in abstinence. That would be a break in abstinence. And I walk away. And then all of a sudden the thinking starts. Like, you know, you're not really working the program all that really well. You know, you're really just technically abstinent. You know, now hear me out. This is the disease just whispering in my ear. I want you hear me out. He goes, the disease says, hey, Tim, if you break your abstinence, this will actually be a good thing. If you have that donut, you'll have one donut. And you'll get to go back into OA tomorrow. You'll know you need to go to OA tomorrow and start again. So again, at the right place, at the right time, the right thought appears. And now I'm going to tell you what happened. Because this is where it's so important. Because I have no defense against that kind of thinking. I have no defense. And so I did. Now what happened is, remember the two things I told myself? It will just be one, and I will start tomorrow. It wasn't just one. As soon as I took that, now I've got craving. And craving is not what the other people talk about craving. It is a feeling. The train has started. And now I'm going. Now I am going. I am going. And I ate every damn one of those. I couldn't stop going back. I could not stop eating. And now that the second promise. The second promise that showed up, I'll start tomorrow. Oh, it was a great plan. It was a great plan. But guess what? The next morning came. The next morning came, and I was unwilling to go. I was unwilling to go and humble myself and say, I think I've made a mistake here. I think I've missed something here. And now I'm going to tell you my story. I didn't start the next day. I didn't start making calls. I did not jump into action. It was 5 years. It was 5 years and 120-pound weight gain. And my wife was afraid of me. I kept it under control for enough time to get that wedding ring on her. But then the game was on. Then the game was on, and I was a slave to the food. So I, for the people that believe that they can just, I can make these choices and thing, and I'll start to get tomorrow. That was not my story. I don't know. I don't know that my family sticks around. I don't know that it's not going to be 10 years or 15 years or 20 years until I'm willing to come back and humble myself and say, I can't do this alone. So thank you very much, because we're just about out of time. Thank you so very much for being here, for keeping the doors open so that when I was ready, because I couldn't stop eating when I came back in. I could not stop eating on my own. I was a slave to food. So those fellows and the people that are here and putting their foot in the ground here today, showing up today, so that the people in the future, for people that we have no idea who's going to walk through the door. Thank you very much. That's all I have. After the seventh tradition is read, this is time for questions only. There is no sharing at this meeting. If you need to share, please do so with any one of us after the meeting. Also, please remember that the opinions of the leaders are my own and not those of Overeaters Anonymous as a whole. When asking questions, you need not identify yourself. Please remember, if you ask a question, your voice may be audible on the OA podcast. Please restate the question. Okay.
Thank you for sharing. I heard a lot of things. So where is God in here?
The question is, let me repeat the question. Where is God? Yes. Thank you very much. That's a great reminder. I constantly need that reminder every day. It's not something that has come. Something did happen on May the 5th, 2009. I couldn't stop eating. Something happened. I really hope that my actions, not just talking about God, not just talking about, I hope my actions show that when asked to do service, whenever and however, that's what I show up to do. But as far as acknowledging God, there are times when I do my 11-step review at the end of the day where I have gone throughout the day without once even thinking of God. That's just mine. And I forget to mention God many times. But I think my actions show that I am grateful for this program. It's not about writing a list. For me, it's not about writing a list or talking about it. It's actually about doing it.
Thanks. So what do you do to defend yourself now when the disease voice has such good ideas?
That's a great question. What do I do to defend myself against the disease? The food, the alcoholic foods have been removed, the trigger foods. I don't know how everybody defines them a little bit differently. I talk about an alcoholic food. Those have really been removed. I got to make my daughters a banana cream pie this week, and it was not my food. There was almost a detachment to it. The good ideas arrive in quantities of food for me still to this day. And that's where I need help. That's where I need the shepherding of a group of men that I'll use. They will help me make those decisions. I have on my phone, under the notes, I have all my meals. I have all variations of my meals over 14 years that have been worked out. With I've got my Mexican meal, I've got my American salad meal, I've got my steak meal, I've got all those meals worked out. And so those decisions are, I can pick from any one of those meals. When I'm in a difficult situation, like last night we were at a tapas restaurant, where it was like, how do you navigate that? You know, how do you navigate that? Well, this is where my wife will, what do you call it, will, really helps me out. Right. Of course, I'm not trying to sneak in any of those alcoholic foods that are going to trigger craving. But I can trigger craving with quantities. I can trigger craving with small amounts of food because the weight will start. And I don't want to talk about the weight, and then I don't want to talk about the extra food. It's interesting. The more I eat, the hungrier I get. You know, when other people, when the normies eat, they fill up, and the more I eat, the hungrier I get. And so I can trigger that. So I need to pick up the phone. This is, to me, is a 10th step. This is a 10th step with my food, because what it says is that the 10th step is when these things come up, when a question comes up, number one, I ask God. Now, I tried to pray to God. I did. I pray. I believe in my God. But me and God alone got fat. Me and God alone got fat. I need my fellows. I need my fellows to guide me and shepherd me, because my thinking at times is going to go askew. So my wife can guide my thinking, or my fellows can guide my thinking. So if I have a question, if I've never been to a restaurant before and I'm on my own, that's when I, hey, can you help me? Here's the menu that I'll be going to, so that you don't even have to give me a menu. So my thinking, when those questions pop up, if it's not one of my pre-approved meals, I need to get approval.
Thank you, Tim. Did you say you went to a topless restaurant?
The question is, did I? The question by Michael B. was.
My question is, so I really relate to when you don't get something you want, like your dad, well, this is the way I'm going to do it. So when that happens now, because I know it does, mm-hmm. in program, can you cite a specific example when that starts to happen and how you use program to kind of counter that?
So the question is when I don't get what I want, how do I go about staying in a peaceful state of mind? Mm-hmm. Would that be? I make a lot of mistakes.
Can you think of a specific example?
A specific example was yesterday. I don't like talking about it, but we were late going to lunch. It appeared to me that we were skipped over in the seating process of a busy lunch. And I asked the guy, I said, hey, were we here first? He goes, no, you weren't here first. And my daughter was with us. And she's like, Dad. And I'm like, are you sure? And he's like, yeah. And he shows me the pad. And he says, yeah, you're here. My daughter is absolutely, she's mortified. And we sat down and she spoke. She's like, Dad. She's like, that is embarrassing to me. He goes, you asked him once, which was fine. I was uncomfortable with that. But you then when you pushed him on it and you had a tone, you would have gone. And I really wanted to say, well, that wasn't. If you'd seen me 14 years ago, that's nothing. And even my wife was kind of defending me, like, yeah, that's pretty mild. What Dad delivered there was a little mild, was pretty mild. And I was like, you know what? You're right. I was like, it just came to me. I've made the mistake so many times the other way, where I've then lashed out and corrected my daughter and then shut her down. Yesterday was a moment where grace came in, right? And I've practiced and I've done it. I've done moments of grace and moments of I've got to make a phone call. I've excused myself. But yesterday it was grace. It was a moment where I just said that you were right. And even when she started she started pushing. She's like, I'm like, hey, I was like, you know, I did make a mistake. And so I want you to think about when you make a mistake in the future, how you want to be treated. And she's like, and, you know, and she was able to say, you're right, Dad. I'm sorry. I was pushing a little bit. And it was instead of blowing up the day over what could have been a simple mistake, me not getting seated and 5 minutes later, right? It was something happened. And that to me, I didn't do that. I did not. Somewhere in this process of these last 14 years, something has happened. I don't know if you got to see the first picture of me. I'm in a fight with the world. That's right, flipping off the world. I am in a fight with this world. I want my way all the time. And I'm just slowly starting to see that instead of thinking that I know, as I was driving over here this morning in the canyon, the thought came that was, instead of knowing, can you seek? Not knowing, but seeking. Because if I think I know, then I have a position to defend. Can I seek to understand? And in a way, I was seeking yesterday, but I did have a tone. And my daughter will call that out because she was embarrassed and she wanted to let me know that she was embarrassed. And can I receive that and clean it up? And so she got me to make amends that I wouldn't have made without her. So it's imperfect. It really is not even close to good. I would, if you scale me on the scale, I'm now starting to become acquainted with my tone. I'm not yelling anymore, but those character defects, the judgment and the criticism, they're still there. They have not moved as of yet. And I look forward to the days they do. So.
Me too.
That was me grabbing Michael B. No.
Given your history with exercise, weight loss, does exercise play a role in your recovery today? And if so, how? And if not, is it a factor at all in your life?
So the question is exercise part of my physical recovery today? Yes. So I don't like to exercise like a healthy person. So for the first 2 years, the recommendation was not to exercise at all because I couldn't just go out and take a walk. I wanted to exhaust myself and totally, and then it would, my sponsor felt that then it would start to, I would want more food. And so for 2 years, no exercise. And I was able to drop weight and get to a healthy body weight. But now so that was when I was 39, and the job that I did at 39, I was able to obtain and maintain a healthy body weight. Now I'm 53, and the foods that I eat, that's been worked out, and part of that is exercise. It's not specifically regimented. I train for 100-mile bike rides in abstinence, and then if I ride over this much, everything was worked out. So there's a food plan for training, and then there's a food plan for exercise. The food plan for exercise is the same as every other day. It doesn't matter if I exercise or not, right? But it is part, and I do it because actually I'm a nicer person. I hate to reference it, but I think the guys might, in the movie Something About Mary, you remember when he was going out on that date? You remember that? You know, and I have that energy all the time. I have that energy, that angst all the time. And I really need to knock a bit of that energy off consistently. It has to be, I have to, because I am charging at the world. That's just who I am. I'm ready to go when I get up. I'm good to go. And I will run at the world. And so part of it is, it's not measured. I don't have a trainer. I don't have a nutritionist. That my story has been, my weight came off. It stayed off. I've been within 5 pounds of a healthy body range for the last 13 years. Adjustments have been made, but it's a very simple conversation. Oh, this is what you're eating. And this is what you're over. We're going to make this adjustment. And he always reminds me every time, he's the judge. I'm the lawyer. I can argue for what I want, but at the end of the conversation, the decision will be made, and I get to stick with that decision. I hope that answers the question.
How would you compare Zoom meetings and in-person meetings?
How would I compare Zoom meetings and in-person meetings? I love the fact that they're coming back. I really do love the fact that in-person meetings are coming back. There is something about the courtesy that we give each other, the attention that we give each other, when you see the guy leaning in, like it, like what you're saying has some import. On Zoom, it's hard to get that feeling. It's hard to get that. You know, a lot of the cameras are off. A lot of it, you know, we're doing. It gives us the illusion that we can do more than one thing at a time. It really does. It really gives us the illusion that, well, I can clean my house and get a meeting in, or I can be driving in a car and get a meeting. And it really, I don't believe that we can. I believe that whatever we're focusing on in that moment is. That's where we are. And at least here, we might be thinking about something else, but I am being of service by looking and nodding and clapping when I'm supposed to clap. I am being of service to the meeting. It's not enough service to help me recover, but it is part of what I do as service, that I really want to look for those similarities. I want to really help that speaker know that what they're saying is making an impact and not just, you know, that's it. What do we got? How much time?
Well, 5 minutes.
Okay, 5 minutes. Okay, one more, another question? Yeah.
Thanks, Tim. Do you have a tool that you use when you think about the loss of the morning of certain foods that you'll never eat again?
So, do I have a loss or a tool that I use for the loss of the foods that I won't eat again? I'm going to give a personal opinion here. I would do away with the tools. I would do away with all the tools. I believe if you're engaged in the steps as they're outlined in the big book, you will take care of all those tools. I knew quickly. Yes, I did. So a month, flour and sugar, I came back right away and I knew that. In my second conversation with my sponsor, he's like, what have you put on your plate that as soon as you put it on your plate, you wanted a second helping? And that was 30 days into this abstinence. And I have no idea why I told him the truth. I really don't. I honestly have no idea. Maybe I thought I was going to get more of it, right? Maybe I did. I don't know. But I just blurted out, oh, potatoes and rice. And he goes, well, Tim, those are alcoholic foods. He goes, you've triggered a little bit of craving. And I'm like, whoa. Well, what about baked potatoes? What about brown rice? This is white rice. What about brown rice? And he goes, Tim, now my sponsor has 24 years. So at the time, he had 10 years. And he was never talking about weight gain. He was never talking about a little bit extra. He was never talking about going to food to help him get through life. And so I wanted what he had. And he goes, Tim, it's been my experience that the people that want to play around with the foods that are right next to their alcoholic foods, they always find a way to make that food that's a safe food or a yellow light food into a red light food. And I'm like, what about baked potatoes? He goes, well, Tim, you can take that baked potato. And it was potato salad that I eat and that I wanted more of. He goes, you can take that potato and make a potato salad by just adding a few ingredients that aren't alcoholic ingredients. And he goes, you're powerless to stop that. And you will then be back into craving, because once you trigger craving, the game is on. That was my experience. What I have to really get, this is not about craving. This is not about quality of life. This is about being a slave to food, right? And once you trigger that, then the game is on. So I guess the tool that I use, and I've had to surrender more foods along the way. Whatever he said, that was the agreement that I made. Whatever he says goes when it comes to food. Period. End of story. And I don't like it, but guess what? My experience is I continue to work and maintain a healthy body weight. I continue on this journey. I'm not taking the detour when life gets really hard. I am forced to the table. I am forced to be with others. I am forced to talk about my judgment, my criticism, my petty bullshit. Because if I don't, I'm eating. Because if I'm, I can coat it with just a little bit extra, just a little bit of this, a little bit of that. So I am forced to the table. And thank God, he said, listen, this is what we do. Here's the meals. Here they are. You want anything out of that? We're going to have a conversation about it. And so I'm glad I was just desperate enough for him just to ask and say, I'll do whatever you say. I've never been that willing. Understand, I've never been as desperate and willing as I was May the 5th. I would have done anything. The only thing that keeps that door open, in my opinion, is action, is what I do. where I show up, how I show up, what I do. I can do it imperfectly, but I better be there. I better be showing up for my fellows. I better be a soldier for the next guy. Because that's what keeps me right in this game. Yeah.
Thank you.
How much time do we have? We have 1 minute. A quick question.
What helps you the most every day?
Sponsees. Sponsees. Listen, I don't like to get up in the morning, but I have sponsees calls at 5 a.m. Guess what? I would have never thought that. I would never, 14 years ago, would have never thought that. It is the greatest gift I've ever had. They keep my nose in the book. And I love, just like my kids, they call me on my shit. And they're grown-ass men. And when I get too full of myself, they will put it right out there on Front Street for me. And I get to go through the process. To me, they are the biggest secret weapon. Give more than you ever thought you wanted to give. More. I don't know why we ask if you're unavailable. With sponsors available and I'm always available. I want this thing. I want more of this thing. And so I got to give more than I ever thought was comfortable. I'm not full. Yeah, we'll figure it out. We'll work it out. Whatever, we'll work it out because my higher power has brought it to me. He wants it for me. So my biggest ace in the hole is Fonzie.
Thank you so much.
Now it's time for the secretary.